4 hours in the waiting room of the emergency room on a Friday evening. You can learn a lot in 4 hours sitting in a waiting room of the ER. People were coming in and out all afternoon. People who were coming with various kinds of sicknesses didn't know exactly what they were. People who were coming in with injuries. People who, a couple of guys who came in with legs that mysteriously just swelled up like crazy. Guy came in who was had mistaken his insulin medicine, made a mistake, and his blood sugar was just diving down. This is making all of you, all the EMSs in the front row are all going, yeah. Another guy who got who came in bleeding off his head. It ends up he got jumped, he got hit in the head with a rock, had his bicycle stolen. Like one thing after another. It was just, it's like, this is like, wow, what a place to be when you're thinking about this story that Jesus is talking about. Right? Getting the Galileans who were killed by Pilate when they were offering sacrifices. What a crazy thing that is, huh? That Pilate, for whatever reason, we don't have any historical evidence about this, but for some reason, these guys are offering sacrifices and Pilate kills them while they're making sacrifice. They're doing their religious duty. And they're destroyed by God. Some people, a tower falls on them. How random is that? And the question Jesus asks the people who tell him these things is, do you think they were worse sinners than anybody else, than any other Galileans? And you have to understand that the answer that they would probably have in their heads is, well, yeah, of course they are. Wouldn't it happen to them if they weren't worse sinners? And Jesus says, no, they were not. But unless you repent, unless you turn around, unless you begin to understand things differently, that kind of senseless death will happen to you. That's an amazing thing to think about. It isn't that Jesus is saying, if you don't get better, you're going to die the same way. That is morally better. He's saying that if you don't change the way you understand who God is and who you are, then you will perish. You will be engaged in the same kind of random stuff that these guys were in, with no real meaning to it. So, what he's trying to get us to see, I believe, is this. That God isn't the one who is punishing the bad and rewarding the good. That is the way people have understood it. You and I probably know better, right? Except for this. I think we do know some better. But I was thinking about this. Now, when is it that we start to think about bad things happening to people and what that might mean relative to God? We think about it, don't we? When bad things happen to who?
People we know.
Good people.
Good people. When bad things happen to good people, right? You start to say, and that this book that was written, When Bad Things Happen to Good People, was it was a huge success. And I actually liked the book. I'm not saying I don't like the book. But what I'm saying is, isn't it interesting that we actually started asking the question, when bad things happen to, it has to be about good people. Because implicitly, we understand that bad things happen to bad people and it's okay. No mystery there. Right? So, I guess we are kind of caught up in that same kind of thing of looking at people who are suffering, people to whom bad things happen, and saying, ah, see, they were bad. But whoa, when something happens to somebody that we know is good, well, then we have a theological crisis or an existential crisis, right? But why didn't anybody write the book When Bad Things Happen to Bad People? Who would buy it?
Bad people.
bad, maybe.
Yeah.
Right? But we're less interested in that. And what Jesus is saying is, I think in this story, is, you know what? Let's take a step back, understand who God really is. Not the punisher, but the merciful one. And let's also take a step back, because why is it that when we start thinking about when bad things happen to good people, we're always in the good people line? How does that happen? So he's actually reflecting both of those things, the nature of God and the nature of us. And that God is actually not pulling the strings to make people suffer. And this is one of the things that the writer of When Bad Things Happen to Good People gets it really clear. And he says it, I'm going to read it because I don't want to mess it up. He says, so first he says, pain is the price we pay for being alive. Dead cells cannot feel pain. They cannot feel anything. When we understand that, our question will change from, why do we have to feel pain or suffer? To, what do we do with our pain so that it becomes meaningful and not just pointless, empty suffering? That's the challenge, that's the invitation that I think Jesus is actually extending to us. So that we're not thinking about this senseless suffering. These guys, the Galileans, or the people in Jerusalem, it's senseless. There's no, it's random. A power falling down. Come on, give us a break. Right? But that suffering actually has for us a way of uniting us closer to God. And the cross is the example. It is the emblem of that reality. That we are called to pick up our cross and follow. To live a life where suffering actually means something. It actually matters. In the midst of all of the random suffering, we don't live meaningless life. God is at work transforming the meaningless into something beautiful, the kingdom of heaven. So all of those people that came through the ER, this is what Jesus was doing in the ER on Friday afternoon. The guy who got beat up, bleeding, his name was Mark. And Mark got brought back to got into the emergency room, and when that happened, there was somebody who noticed, another person who was there sick noticed, hey you guys, Mark forgot his cell phone on the table there, and I was sitting next to Mark, and I said, oh yeah, there it is, okay, I'll take it up to the security guard. Security guard took it, said thank you. A couple minutes later, we see Mark coming out. I don't know how y'all look when you've lost your cell phone. It's like, it's a panic, right? He comes out in a panic, and the security guard goes, don't worry, man, they took care of it. They found it here. Right? So, great. Mark said, oh, and he turns to the crowd, thank you. This whole big room of waiting room full of people. All right, so that happens. Then another guy, he's coming in with his own injury, and he's walking in at the same time as this older woman, and the younger woman is pushing her in a wheelchair, and they're having a hard time getting through the door. He stops, and with his gimpy leg, he helps her get through the door. And then the next thing I know, they're sitting next to me, and they're chatting, and I thought they were family. When they first came in, I thought they were family. No, this guy didn't know them from anybody. But there he was, and all of a sudden, there's this trio of people who were sitting there talking to each other and encouraging one another, and it was just amazing. They even started talking about the NCAA basketball tournament together, right? I was like, oh my gosh, they must be friends. But they weren't. And, so then another guy comes through, and he lost his wallet. He was back in the ER. He came back out into the waiting room, and he's like, has anybody seen my brown wallet? I mean, my brown checkbook. And everybody. I mean, people who are sick are getting up. It's like, oh, let me check. You know, holding themselves up, and they're all trying to find this guy's checkbook. It's stunning the things that are happening in here with these people who are, like, they're all, you know, in some way, in the back of our minds, we're thinking, you know, these guys, they deserve it because they, you know, they smoke, they drink, the guy with the insulin, you know, he wasn't careful, blah, blah, blah. No, it's not like that. All of a sudden, all of these people are becoming this community of love and support, and it's gorgeous. And it doesn't stop in the waiting room. Because the ER itself is just filled with people. They had people out in the hallways in gurneys and stuff. And people are walking. As they get in, they're walking around going, hey, all right, are you doing all right? You getting what you need? And yeah, yeah. And another guy, I heard another guy say, there was a man standing there after he came in with back spasms or whatever he had. And he's standing up. And then another guy's going, man, look at you. You came in here, like you couldn't even bend. Look at you, you're standing right up. This is great. Way to go. And he says, yeah, I know. It's amazing. This is wonderful. This whole community has been created out of all of these random people in crisis. And I think that's exactly the kind of thing that God is up to. It reminds me very much of, in fact, it is the very thing that St. Lawrence talks about. Now, St. Lawrence was a deacon in about the 2nd century, 3rd century, and he was a deacon in Rome, in the New Vatican, all right? And the emperor had found out, had heard rumor, that the church had a lot of riches. A lot of gold, a lot of money, a lot of wealth, a lot of land. And so the emperor said to the pope, I want you to hand over the riches of the church to me. You have. Get all your stuff together and hand it over to me. And the pope refused. And so the emperor had him beheaded. So the next person who was the pope, same thing. He went right down the line. Everybody said, refused to do it, off with their head. They come, there's nobody left but St. Lawrence, right? And he's a deacon, that's all he is. But now all of a sudden he's in charge, and the saint offer, bring me the riches of the church. St. Lawrence says, I will need 3 days. And 3 days, okay. So he goes out, and in 3 days he comes back. And with him are all of these people who are, some of whom were in the Wenatchee ER the other day, people who are lame, people who are lepers, people who are poor, people who are widowed, people who are orphans, all of those people, right? And the emperor says to Lawrence, are you ready to hand over the treasures of the church? And he says, I am. And, of course, the emperor is all excited. He says, wonderful, okay? Hand them over. Points to all of the people. And he says, these are the treasures of the church. These are the treasures. God is at work turning the world upside down. That is to say, right side up. And those folks who are the broken ones, who are most like the Lamb of God who we worship. Those are the ones around whom we gather. Those are the ones in whom God is making things amazing. In an ER room, in front of an emperor, before us. And we are invited into their suffering, which is not meaningless suffering. It is all part of God turning the world inside out. If we are bold enough to step into that and watch what God does. These are the treasures of the church. Can we enter into that? Treasuring of the treasures. That's our call. And when we do, oh, it is amazing what we see. It's like an emergency room that becomes a family.